that he's an adorer.
Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila 20, 11, 13, and 14, then says, simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Krishna, one can be freed from all undesirable habits. This is the means of awakening all good fortune and initiating the flow of waves of love for Krishna. I think this Antya 20 is the Shikshastaka. I think the chapter, I'm not sure. Because here is...
What are the seven transcendental qualities of being?
That is mentioned here. The Cheto Darpana Marjanam, that's one. Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam, two. Shrey Karavi Chandrikavi Taranam, three. Vidya Vadhu Jivanam, four. Anandam Budivardhanam, five. Pratipadam Purnam Taswadanam, six. Sarvatma Snapanam, seven. Because it's given also, I think this will come up in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary. In other words, this is a bhashya on the Shikshastaka by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote a commentary on that. Like that. So then you get, means whatever needs to be further expanded upon, then that is done by him. And so he is, because Agni means in the sacrifice, then you're dealing with Agni, right? A yajna means is Agni. So then Agni then has seven tongues, right? So these seven tongues are then these seven aspects of the Sankirtan mission here, like that. That will come up. Okay, so simply by chanting, one can be freed from all undesirable habits, right? So chanting, then the mirror is cleaned, one becomes Mahadavagni is corrected, right? This is the means of awakening all good fortune, Shreya Karavi Chandrita, and initiating the flow of waves of love of Krishna, Anandam Buddhivardhanam. By performing congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, one can destroy the sinful condition of material existence, purify the unclean heart, and awaken all varieties of devotional service. Right? Because when this is removed, then naturally it's there. That's the point where Prabhupada's saying is that it's not something imposed on the nature of the living entity. Right? A lot of the philosophers like to take it that we're imposing all these different things. But the point is there is a natural truth. Because there means if we say, you're imposing all this onto Godhead or anything like this, that you're trying to impose your qualities onto God, or you make like this. But actually what they're saying is, there can't be any God have any qualities, therefore you anything you think of would be transcendental qualities, then are imposing something on God. Right? So this means, one, there's not an absolute truth, right? Because anything you say can't be in connection with that. And two, is their concept is whatever is made possibly absolute is impersonal. Right? Even though it sounds very nice, don't project your things on all these, that's nice sounding. But factually, they're impersonalists. Right? And they don't believe there's any qualities and there is no absolute truth. So they're actually worse than the impersonalists because they at least understand there's an absolute truth. And there are things that you have to bring in line with and be able to understand. Right? So it's a next step. So it's generally more almost like voidism. There's just nothing. Right? There isn't any absolute anything like that. So here is that by cleansing the heart, then all these natural services that are already there then arise in the heart. Right? Just like you already have a face, right? But if you look in a dirty mirror, you can't see that face. So it's not you're imposing something on yourself by cleaning the mirror and then seeing what you look like. Does that make sense? It's just the natural form of what you look like. Does that make sense? Right. So that's what's going on. Here. There is, next quote. The result of chanting is that one awakens his love for Krishna and tastes transcendental bliss. Ultimately, one attains the association of Krishna and engages in his devotional service, as if immersing himself in a great ocean of love. Right, so by chanting, it says simply by chanting, one clears the heart, awakens devotional service, and then brings oneself to the platform of transcendental bliss. Then it says here, ultimately one attains the association of Krishna. Notice these subtleties here. Result of chanting is one awakens his love for Krishna and tastes transcendental bliss, right? Awakens his love so that attachment is awoken. That will then bring one to the point of taste transcendental bliss, ecstasy, or bhava. From that, then ultimately one attains the association of Krishna. So within that, that apandas, one comes to that position of an associate of Krishna and engages in his devotional service as if immersing himself in a great ocean of love. Then it's coming to prema. Understand? So just very, very nice ways of explaining, you know, the same thing, but the combinations are slightly different, what they're emphasizing in that, or where they're getting into detail, or whether they're just, you know, by chanting, it will clear the heart, remove material existence, awaken devotional service. That will then awaken one love for Krishna. It'll bring you to the transcendental platform of ecstasy, which will then come to the point of the ocean of nectar of serving Krishna. So we see that this whole process of shravana, what's it called? Shraddha de Prema is being explained. This whole process that's being given here in the Chaita Darpana Marjanam, that this is by starting there, awakening, cleaning the heart, everything will then start to happen, and it will bring one to your natural position as servant of Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah,
yes. Maharaj, if the chanting does everything, then why do we have to follow Daivi Varna Ashram?
Basically, for the simple reason that, like Haridas Thakur, you're not chanting 192 rounds every day with full attention. Does that make sense? That's why then Pancharatra is first introduced. Right? Then, it's a lot of kids. They're not coming this way, are they? They're not talking in German, are they? Just to make sure. The idea is to be fully absorbed. Right? So the Bhagavat platform is enough for the jiva to be fully absorbed. But in the conditioned state, he tends to not take the transcendental platform very seriously. Right? Because if we say simply by chanting, then we'll only use simply by chanting to get rid of all our other material obstacles. Right? Because Varnashram is basically, it means in the mind of somebody who has material conditioning, especially modern material conditioning, that would be a great obstacle because it seemingly regulates your life in a way that you're not used to. Unfortunately, what's not seen is that regulation then therefore gives rise to all the material desires that you want to have fulfilled that you're trying to do without the Vedic culture and you're failing at is that you actually want to be happy materially, then the Vedic culture is the only way to do it. There is not another method. You want to be materially happy, you can only be materially happy by following the Vedic method. Right? If you want any consistency. Oh, you can get something here and there, like that. But, you know, it's just like you read Mahabharata. Every aspect of it, then there's something connected to Krishna, right? And that's dealing so much with emotion, so much emotion. It's very full and all that, okay? And you read that for 2 hours. Try reading some other book or try watching a movie, a modern. How often is there something there that really has substance? Right? And they're trying so many nice tricks. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, it doesn't work. Now, a Mahabharata, men can listen to it, be inspired. Women can listen to it and be inspired. Right? But a movie a man likes, do women like? No. And the movies that women like, do men like? No. So that means they have no idea of what they're dealing with. But in the Vedas, they tell a story, both the men and the women are both inspired. Does that make sense? So that means they know something that modern man has absolutely no idea of. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the idea, is that So the Vedic takes care of those material desires that distract us from Krishna, because we actually don't think it's so simple. When we say, I'll keep it simple, we're only talking about that to remove any material obstacles to our idea of how to be happy. Once we've done that, then we make our life very sophisticated. You know what I'm saying? Oh, we keep it simple, we only have to chant, why do we have to follow Varnashram? And then we'll get into all kinds of, you know, modern self-help, this, that, blah, blah, on and on. Right? So that's the whole point, is why not go to the experts? Yudhishthir was a pretty good manager. You know, so was his brothers. Even his wife was a good manager. You know how much wealth Yudhishthir had? It's unlimited, right? How much he get? Each king who brought something for the Rajasuya, he gave, whatever he gave 1,000 of it. If he gave elephants, 1,000 elephants. If he gave, you know, gold chariots, he gave 1,000 of those. If he gave, you know, gold bricks, he gave 1,000 of those. Whatever they brought 1,000, right? And all the kings of the earth came. Duryodhana, who is as strong as 10,000 elephants, right? He was having to receive all that and put it in the treasury. He had to sit down sometimes, he was so tired. And he's as strong as 10,000 elephants. Right? And they are also in the family of emperors of the world. Right? It means Pandu was emperor of the world, he left the kingdom to Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra won't maintain it as well. Right? And so it'll slowly the other kings will become a little more independent. But they're used to that lifestyle and that kind of wealth. But the wealth that he saw at the Rajasuya, Duryodhana had never seen before, you know, to the point where he's so jealous, right? Does that make sense? You know, and all of that is managed by Draupadi. So if you want to know how much wealth Yudhishthir has, you have to ask her, not Yudhishthir. You know what I'm saying? So they're all pretty good managers. So there's something to learn from them. Right? The Grihasthas, they stay together as a family. We can learn on that. Okay, so they're good managers, they're good administrators, they're good warriors, right? They know the Shastra. So many things we can learn. Right? So that's therefore then why then the Vedic culture is introduced. Because there isn't anything better. Right, but in ignorance, then we take religion to be irreligion, and irreligion to be religion. Does that make sense? Because we don't say, oh, we just chant Hare Krishna, why do we need Varnashram? We don't say, oh, we just chant Hare Krishna, so why do I need cars and money and houses and that? Hey, I just live in the temple, and whatever the Krishna gives me in the temple, that's enough for me, because I just chant all day. So is that the finishing your sentence? I doubt it. Therefore, then, it's a good point, but its actual basis doesn't have any validity. Does that make sense? It will come up. Devotees will ask that but the thing is what they're using here is also the element of just, why do we even know Vedic cultures there? If it absolutely wasn't important, then do you think Prabhupada would even talk about it? Other than just stay away from it? Like, how much does he talk about the Sahajas? Right? Enough that we know what they are and to stay away from them. But anything more than that? Every purport? No. So, therefore, then you know, that's what you don't need. But when he's talking about it and saying human life begins with Varnashram, and human being inquires into the absolute truth, and the duty of a human being is to take up Krishna consciousness. If you add all that up, what does that mean? So that means we're supposed to be following Varnashram with the attitude of serving Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? That doesn't mean kings walk around with swords and crowns, and, you know, does that make sense? It's a matter of what is the principles of being established there. What makes a king a king? Yudhishthir's in the forest in deerskins, but he's still the emperor of the world. So what makes him that? That's the principles we follow. Does that make sense? Not that, you know, he has, you know, pointy shoes with, you know, curly tips or something like that, or, you know, that's not what we're looking at. These are details to make. If you're doing that kind of service, then there's so many things that go along with that. But what makes a Kshatriya is actually his attitude, because the Pandavas were saying, we'll take 5 villages, you know, 1 for each brother, and we'll be able to act as Kshatriyas. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, you know, when I've been hearing you for a few days, and what I'm thinking at some level is, you know, like, at the age I am and how confused I am with my life, it doesn't matter like how much I've done, I'm thinking, what should I do in my learning ability? And I'm thinking, well, is it Pancharatrika? Should I go for Varnashram, Devi Varnashram, or just Chanaya Krishna? And it becomes a...
Why can't you do all of that? So, should I take lunch, or should I, you know, put in my 6 hours of sleep at night, or should I go to Mangalartik, or maybe I should just chant my rounds, or what about going to Bhagavatam? Why can't we do all of that?
I have something set up with it, I would say.
Yeah, but the point is we do chant, and how much we can chant and stay on the Bhagavat platform, we do that. But to ensure that we do that and don't get distracted by the material energy, then we have Pancharatra. So our lifestyle is actually Pancharatra. Our attitude that we're trying to develop is that of Bhagavat. But to take up the slack between those two, that's what Varnashram does. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, where do you get it from? Okay, needs aren't being fulfilled there, so therefore we're living outside the temple. So Pancharatra doesn't deal with that. Bhagavat doesn't deal with that. You know what I'm saying? What deals with that? Varnashram. Therefore, where is applicable, that's what you use. Does that make sense? So whatever is, however important these things are in your life, if all the more deity worship you're going to do is go to the temple and attend Mangalartik and Darshanartik and take Charinamrita, these kind of activities, then, you know, you have a Pancharatric lifestyle. Our lifestyle is actually Pancharatrik. Because Bhagavat means you just chant Hare Krishna, like the Goswamis. That's a Bhagavat lifestyle, basically. Right? Because there's no specific thing. It's just you're absorbed in hearing and chanting. Does that make sense? So technically our lifestyle is, the form of our day is Pancharatrik. But those needs that don't fit into that, that aren't ekayana, you know, directed actually at the deity, that's what Varnashram covers. Like, you know, how do you take care of your house? You know, other than you keep it clean, that's Pancharatrik. But, you know, the aesthetics of it, where you live, what you put in what room, and this and that, like that. How do you interact with wife and family? This is all Vedic. So what you need to know for dealing with the family and those things, that you get from the Vedas. That you know about your specific, you know, main devotional lifestyle, or worship the deity, that you get for the Pancharatra. And our chanting, and the main thrust, you know, of hearing, chanting, remembering, that we take from the Bhagavad. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of being honest, how much do you need? If you like to worship deities, doing a lot of pujari work is that, then, you know, educating yourself further in that field, then is worthwhile. Get into the technicalities of all the mantras and the rituals and this. But if you don't, then why get that in there? You know what I'm saying? If you're not married, why bother with all the aspects of marriage? But if you are married, why you wouldn't bother with them? Does that make sense? So you figure out exactly what position you're in, and then get that. You know, or if you already have it, cultivate it. Like that. So it's very straightforward, very practical. The whole Vedic concept is very practical. Because the Vedic knowledge is, the Vedic society is meant to bring one to the Bhagavat platform. But the point is that we're not necessarily have that kind of faith or commitment. So then that that form of, or the Bhagavat attitude then takes a form of Pancharatra, right? And then what elements then aren't directly connected to the Lord, then there's forms for that, that you can connect it to the Lord, though it becomes indirect. In the second canto, Krishna says that you should think of him both directly and indirectly. So in other words, where you can directly, that's better. So that'll be your Pancharatrika and your Bhagavat. But the indirect, that'll be all aspects of Varnashram that are the actual distraction about that makes you forget Krishna. Because it's always remember, never forget. So Varnashram takes care of never forget. You know what I'm saying? Some of Pancharatra also does that, Bhagavat also does, but on a very subtle platform. You know, the quality of it means you should always be absorbed, you know, in pure chanting and all that. So removing the anarthas, that's the never forget. Right? Being absorbed in the holy name, association of devotees, the Lord's name, form, quality, pastimes, that's the always remember. Does that make sense?
Yes. So the information we need, like when for the never forget, like for the Varnashram, so where do you get this from?
So much is there, Papa gives it basically all of the books.
Me, it's on the Bhagavatam?
Bhagavatam, Gita, everywhere he talks about it.
No.
Like that.
It's in the books.
It's in the books. But if you need more detail, means you're going to need to use the technical aspects in some kind of leadership position, then Prabhupada mentions Manusamhita is there. And that should be studied if that's going to be an area. If administration and those kinds of things are important for you, then it has its value. Right? Because then you can understand what is the social structure, what is the administrative structure, how one's based on the other, like that. So then, you know, there's a natural progression of how it is. It means the Varna Dharma is based on Ashram Dharma, like that. It's only the application of the Ashram Dharma for economics. Does that make sense? Like that. So, because for the Brahmins, their Ashram Dharma is the Varna Dharma. You know, what you do in the Ashram is what Brahmins do. That is their lifestyle. That is their occupation. Does that make sense? So when you expand that more, the needs are greater and all that, then they expand into how a Kshatriya maintains himself, how a Vaishya maintains himself, or how a Shudra maintains himself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I have to chew.
I'll...
Okay, yeah. No, that's fine. That's fine. Okay, so then he was giving that as a conclusion about this. We can see that from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, these verses, then explain, you know, in a very direct way, very straightforward way, the meaning of this first shloka. Right? It means that by chanting, then all inauspicious things will be removed and all auspicious things will happen for the living entity and he'll come to the platform of love of God. Right? So that's basically then what this first verse is then saying. Okay. Now commentary by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There are innumerable engagements in the execution of devotional service. And Srimad Bhagavatam and Hari Bhakti Vilas have described many of them. Broadly, 64 limbs of devotional service are considered as the main engagements of bhakti. Vaidhi bhakti, devotional service according to rules and regulations, and Raganuga bhakti, spontaneous devotional service, are the two methods of executing these 64 principal engagements. Right? Notice he mentions there is that these 64 items, they're used by both. Right? So in other words, when we describe Vaidhi bhakti, then Vaidhi bhakti is actually the mentality of doing it because it is the rule. Right, it says here, devotional service according to rules and regulations. That means your devotional service is based on the principle of rules and regulations. So describing the 64 items of devotional service, that's not Vaidhi bhakti. Does that make sense? This mistake is made a lot. you know, that Vaidhi is one thing and Raganuga is a completely separate thing. No, it's the activities are the same. There's the 64 items of devotional service. Then you can perform them according to the mood of Vaidhi or the mood of Rag. Does that make sense? So it's all based on that. Then when it gets to, Bhav Sadhana, that's then another kind of form of sadhana. Because then you're in your sarup, you're in your eternal form, you're in the spiritual world, you have the Lord's associates, you learn from them about what services you're supposed to do. So it's in its own category. But then the mentality is very important also, because that makes the difference on whether you advance very quickly or not. Right? But from Shraddha to Asakti, there's the 64 items of devotional service that are performed either according to Vaidhi or Rag. Right? But those remain. Those don't change. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. That's an important perspective. Otherwise, then we just, oh, it's a rule, so it's Vaidhi. No, it's a rule. This is the form of it. Now, whether you are doing that because of the rule or doing it because of... Otherwise, what do they do for Krishna and Dwarka? Right? And what do they do in Braj? Right? They live with him, they feed him, they clothe him, they do all these... But one is in rules and regulations, one is spontaneous. Right? So the basic elements are the same. So that's why the elements... Since if the material world is meant to get you to the spiritual platform, then the elements of it should be actually the same. Does that make sense? You're supposed to... What's the first thing that you do in... It means when we're talking about the 64 items of devotional service, what's the first thing that is brought up?
Spiritual master.
Right? So what is that? That's your authority. That's your connection to the system. Okay, now in the Vedas, what's the first thing that means in the Dharma Shastra, when you're dealing with Varnashram, what's the first thing that's established?
Teacher.
Yeah, respect for authority. Because if that's not there, you're not going to be able to follow the instruction that's given there. Now in Pancharatra, after you've put all the patrasthapana and everything, all the paraphernalia is in place, and once you sit down, you've installed your asana, you sit down, now you're going to actually start things. What's the first thing that you do? Yes, the Guru Punkti Namaskar. You respect the spiritual master. Does that make sense? So there's no difference in any of the systems. Right? When those on the Bhagavat platform, when they start offering... you know, more elaborate prayers, or they're going to write their books or different things, what do they start with?
Mangalacharan.
Yeah, Mangalacharan. In there, what do they do?
Prefer spiritual master and devotional.
Yeah. Generally, you always will see that the spiritual master, the devotees, are always glorified in connection with Krishna. So, do we understand the principle? So that's the point, whether it's spiritual or material, the same principles have to be followed. It's just a matter of, is that authority spiritual or is that authority simply, you know, something of the material? Are they giving me material knowledge in the way of like the Veda, or is it my parents, or are giving me practical knowledge in just how to live within the culture? You know, or is it I go to the school and my teacher and he teaches me some Sanskrit? And so then I know the language that's used by these people in this community. Does that make sense? Or I have authorities that, you know, heads of the community, the senior people of the community, then there's administration above them, right? The police represent that administration. They're to be respected. Does that make sense? No, but the principle is the same. That's the point, is that there's Krishna's culture. There isn't another culture. Then it's just a matter of whether you recognize it, that's Vedic, or don't recognize it, that's modern. That's all. But the same principles of culture are there. Right? Modern man did not invent the family unit, the concept of marriage, children, economics, sense gratification. Right? They didn't invent any of this. the idea to get yourself, free yourself from material entanglement. Right? So Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, they didn't invent. Right? The five rasas, they didn't invent. The seven secondary rasas, they didn't invent. So it's already there. The same culture is there. And so it's going to work in the same matter. Right? You have a car, you drive it for Krishna, or you don't drive it for Krishna. The method of driving is the same. The mechanics are the same. In one, you're humble, this and that. The other, you may have some attitude. Right? So therefore, the mood changes. Therefore, you say one is one thing, one's the other. But actually, the mechanics are the same. Because it's God's creation. It works in one way. It doesn't work. Krishna says there's one path. He doesn't say there's many paths. Right? The person in illusion thinks there's many paths. But there's only one. It's God's path. You're either going towards God or away from God. You have these two choices. Right? So that aspect, so that's why when it's not supposed to be such a difficulty in accepting the principle of varnashram. Because that's just how that spiritual culture works in the material environment. Right? Because here everything's temporary, right? They don't have to worry about death rites in the spiritual world. Right? Krishna will never have to perform the Antyeshti ceremony for Nanda Baba. Right? So he doesn't have to do that. So these principles are always there. So some things are put in for the temporary. Like Krishna has his pastimes of birth and very small as a baby killing the demons. They don't have that in the spiritual world. Right? So these are added. They're based on the same principles, but they're added. So there may be something that makes it fit into the environment that the material world is, that it represents. But there's only one culture. So this thing that there's alternative cultures doesn't exist. It's actually an illusion that there's another way of dealing with material energy than the way Krishna says it will work. Right? Krishna says you drop something, it goes down. It doesn't matter who you are, where you are, or what you're dropping, it goes down. Right? So that's the whole point. So everything else is exactly like that. Right? How you deal with money in India is the same way you deal with it in America or in London or in Australia. Right? Does that make sense? I buy something for 10 rupees, I sell it for 20 rupees, I make profit. It doesn't matter where I am. I buy it for 20 rupees, I sell it for 10 rupees, I lose money. So like that, you can go through everything that there is. And it works according to God's laws. Does that make sense? So that's the principles always apply. Detail, that's another thing. Does that make sense? Detail, that's another thing. Some of the things I'd sell in India may not sell in America. So that's a detail. But the principle of how you're going to price you're going to buy it for and sell it for, that remains the same. That's the economics. The other is the art of the economics. Does this make some sense? Yeah. So then and here, as we see that within the devotional, is that he says there are two methods of executing these 64 principal engagements. Right? So he says, there are innumerable engagements in execution of devotional service, right? Broadly, 64 limbs of devotional service are considered as main engagements of bhakti. So 64 items, that's devotional service, not vaidhi. And so it'll be explained there. That explains vaidhi bhakti, because vaidhi is according to the rules. Raganuga is then the mentality that is then placed upon that. It's a different mentality. But you don't have to re-explain the 64 items because they've already been explained within in relationship to vaidhi. Does that make sense? Like that. Okay. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj glorifies pure and spontaneous devotional service as the best method. Lord Gaurasundar has identified the best engagement by saying, quote, "The congregational chanting of the holy name of Lord Krishna is the most perfect form of devotional service." The absolute truth defined. Those who know the transcendental absolute truth. It's not correct. Class is over 15 minutes ago and we're still sitting here. So. Okay. Those who know the transcendental absolute truth have defined the supreme non-dual substance as Brahman when it is primarily realized as eternity. When realized as eternity and knowledge, it is defined as Paramatma. When its transcendental nature of full knowledge, eternity, and bliss is realized with all potencies, the supreme absolute truth is known as Bhagavan. That supreme personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, is called Vasudeva when he manifests his supreme opulence. When he gives when his opulence gives way to his loving conjugal mood, he is known as Krishna. As Narayana, he particularly reciprocates with his devotees in the rasas of Shanta and Dasya. Lord Krishna is the worshipable object of all five rasas. Lord Krishna's Vibhav Prakash expansion is Lord Balaram, who rules Vaikuntha in his eternal Chaturvyuha forms. So here is non-dual. So he's saying that all these three aspects are Krishna. But at the same time, there's difference. They're non-dual. So it means it's Krishna. But we can, for understanding of the flavors, there's a difference. So Brahman means the eternal aspect. Like we're saying, okay, this pillar, then why it does the function it does is because of Krishna's potency of strength or the ability to hold something up like that. So that's an eternal energy, right? So the existence principle is being discussed. So that existence is in the existence of strength or holding something up, right? Someone else, or maybe the existence is in the state of that of, let's say, musical, good musical quality. But that quality is an eternal principle. Does that make sense? Or they're existing in the state of happiness. Right? Because the happiness principle is an eternal principle. Does that make sense? Hari Bol, sir. The class is going on. I call you after. Ah, oh, very good. Okay, I call you back. Hari Bol. Okay, is that understood? So these principles on which, in other words, we're looking at it that it's material nature, or it's Maya, that is broken by the Brahman principle. Right? It means if you can directly connect it to Krishna, even better. But a lot of times the attachments are so deep or so, obscure or particular, that it's not so easy to say it's Krishna. Right? It means, of course, Hindus can say, yes, the child is God, so, you know, like this, so we worship. Like, you can do that, but that's not actually the real principle. So the idea is, whatever it is that it impresses us about anything, that quality, that's an eternal quality. That quality always exists, right? That's the universal form. So all the qualities and all the actions, all the desires, all the attachments, all the actions, all the results, right? Any position one may have, whatever one may look like, all that is there in the universal form. So it's eternally there. That's the Brahman platform, right? But you understand, our Brahman platform is personal. We know that's why it's non-dual. It's Krishna. But it's just part of his energy. It's part of the his unlimited qualities, then comes out, is manifest as the Brahman. Means the qualities are there in him as a person, and that effulgence from those qualities that creates the Brahman. The reflection of that Brahman is what we see in everything here. Does that make sense? Just that there it's in light, and here it's in darkness. But it's the same qualities, it's the same principles. Right? When then we add knowledge to this, now we know that it's Krishna's energy. Means we know it's the energy, but the emphasis is on the energy, because that's the experience that cuts the attachment. Then it's Krishna as Paramatma, is in every atom, between every atom, he's controlling it. Therefore, how we're getting that experience, through what methods, that's by Paramatma. So then we're giving existence and knowledge together. Right? But then when we take it to Krishna as a person, that he is so kind that he's made this arrangements, given the material world, come and perform his pastimes, given the shastras, sent the acharyas, so that then we can engage in all these activities so that we can bring ourselves to him. That's Bhagavan. Does that make sense? How these three work together? So depending upon what's one's understanding or realization or focus at the moment, then one should be connected with any of these three. Right? Of them, though, Krishna says he is still separate as Bhagavan. So therefore, that is the main principle. But to get there, we can cut the material distraction with the first two. Right? Because Brahman exists in light or in knowledge. Right? Right? And Paramatma is that that knowledge as being applied. But they both are known in this material world. You understand? The spiritual world, no one worries about Paramatma or Brahman. They're not topics of discussion. Because Bhagavan is right in front of us, so they don't get involved. They don't get, yes.
So, dealing on the central platform, this works very logical. So then on an emotional platform,
it's the same. Because what are you getting means, what the sensuality is what? It's an experience, and which is based on a quality. Like something sweet, or it's salty, or it's soft, or it's hot, or cold. So it's based on the quality, but the result of it is very small, right? And short-lived. As long as the sense object are touching, or in contact, then that experience is there. As soon as they're disengaged, the experience is gone. Right, the emotional is the same thing. It's based on qualities, but it's just a superior manifestation of rasa.
So you just have to focus on not being the controller, because as soon as this comes up, then whatever level you might get to, you smash back down.
Basically, it means as controller and enjoyer, you can work in the sensual or emotional fields of rasa. But only as servant of Krishna can you function in transcendental rasa. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the... But the point is it's qualities nonetheless. And Krishna, then that's combined. That transcendental experience includes both the emotions and the senses. Like that. While here, they tend to be separate. You know what I'm saying? It means, let's say... Looking at it very technically. See, is that men will categorize intellectual, emotional, and sensual as three actually completely different categories. They can be kind of connected and work together, but they're three different categories. Feminine nature, they're actually one substance, just three different viewpoints. Like that. Because each has a connection with the other. If the emotions aren't there, then there's no question of sense gratification. Like that. So all these different things, they work. If there's not an emotional logic to it, then there's no emotion. So all these different things happen. So, but the point is that's the natural tendency, so the conditioned nature will manifest as masculine or feminine. right? But in actuality, the consciousness of the living entity is that of Purusha, or masculine. That's why the Shastras always say he, because every living entity in the material world thinks like they're a man, despite whatever the conditioned nature. So all this jumping up and down that, you know, why does it say he, why not she, or he, she, or it, or whatever it is, you know, make it more politically correct. This is the mentality of gross materialists, right? And I am talking about the devotees here, because they have no idea that they're not the body. Because if they're not the body, why does it matter whether it says he, she, or it? Right? So that point then is because every living entity, no matter what, even they're in the, you know, in the protozoa body, they still think I'm the control and enjoyer, which is Purusha Bhav, masculine. Right? So therefore, that's why even in the devotional process, whether it's men or women, we divide it up. Because that's the only way to cut it. Because when you divide them, then you can deal with them, and then you can break them up. You know what I'm saying? Is if they're all together, it's such a nice package, nobody gives it up. Right? Is that what I'm saying? Men take sannyas, women generally don't. Right? Why? Because the package is different. The man can separate it up to the point. It's like you take, let's say, this very nice, we have this very nice, attractive machine here. Okay? And so then, if we take, it looks nice now, right? The color and the screen and all the different things. Now, if we take this and dismantle it completely down to the last point. Did I push something I shouldn't have? Now it's going around the other way. No, it still says it's going on. It's still giving numbers. Okay. Then, will it be attractive? Oh, of course, maybe if you're a nerd, but wait, but if you're not, it's not going to be attractive. Does that make sense? So that's why we deal with things in this way. You mechanically take them apart down to the last, you know, nut and bolt. And then they're not attractive anymore because you see them for what they actually are. So that's why we dismantle it here. But on the spiritual, we put it together. Because then all that whole experience of the sensual, the emotional, all that is all together, and that's very attractive. But here, we don't put it together, we take it apart. Unless someone is unwilling, let's say, like Varnashram, they're unwilling to accept Varnashram, but they're willing to accept modern sense gratification. So then you show them that the Vedic is actually superior sense gratification. Why would you accept the modern when you can get more out of the Vedic? Right? That brings them then to the pious platform. Then from there is that, but same time as what you can get out of that as a living entity, the material aspect is actually very minimal. So therefore, from the platform of Naishkarmya, you can actually get much greater. That happiness of being disengaged from the material attachment is much greater than the attachment itself. And then you bring them to the point of spiritual attachment. Does that make sense? So, therefore, these principles are used that these differences are made in this way, and it's explained for everybody, because everybody does have that element. It's just a matter of the women will use it from their perspective of it's the same thing, but they'll just flip it around. You know, if you can't get at the emotions directly by duty, you can get at them through the senses. You know what I'm saying? The girl could have, you know, through a proper religious way, organized her relationship with a man in which she will get a nice quality of interaction, right? Appreciation, right? If she can't get it that way through Dharma, then she can get it through the senses. So she can dress up, you know, in a really sleazy little way, walk down a busy street, and then hundreds of men will look at her with desire. And then she feels, I'm needed, I'm important. So, but what she's doing that for is not for the senses, it's for the emotion. The man thinks, oh, it's for the senses, because they can't tell the difference. You know, these kind of, they're not discriminating properly. You know what I'm saying? If it's senses, then that means that they can't understand its senses are the medium for the emotion. So that's why when he goes up to her and says, you know, hey, babe, she goes, you know, my name's not babe. You know, it's like that, because That's not what she's doing it for. She doesn't want anyone to interact with her. She just wants to feel important and evoke that emotion. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, because it's used in these different ways, it's still then analyzed and broken down so that that whatever is not being properly connected to Krishna can be adjusted. Does that make sense? So therefore, it's still defined from the masculine point of view. But it has to be addressed to the feminine because the jiva is feminine. Does that make sense? So it has to accommodate both. So that's why then the element of the approach from the element of rasa means tattva is used to get the scenario, but rasa is used actually for the application because that's where you're going to apply it. You don't apply it as tattva, you apply it as rasa. Right? Krishna is God, I'm his servant. So what do you apply it as? That interaction between you and God. You know what I'm saying?
So the tattva breaks it into its
yeah, it's real parts.
Position so that you're not in illusion and then you then go back to the rasa. And
then that's why it must be practically applied. Because that brings it down to actually the sense, the sense object, the emotion, the jiva and God, you know, devotee and devotee, like that.
Because then when the mind adopts the real pattern of this, then it becomes more steady in this.
Yeah, like that. Then one can see these things properly, because one's properly situated, then act within one's conditioned nature as either masculine or feminine. Because everything's being done as you're serving Krishna, which is the feminine principle, because he's the masculine. You know, but to do that properly, you have to break the false idea of masculinity that I am God. And so that doesn't matter what the living entity is or what form, they all have that. Is that okay?
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Shri Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Janyata Gaura Premanandi. Yeah.